Well, on March 13th, 1997, it's kind of the main event, although there were sightings before and there have been sightings afterward. But March 13th, 1997, over a span of several hundred miles, there were sightings by thousands of people of two different types of lights over the area generally considered sort of the Phoenix metropolitan area, but in the rural parts all the way to Tucson, people were seeing formations. The government says, well, there's an explanation for that, although they didn't pass it along at the time, not when then Governor Fife Symington said that he asked for an explanation. They said at the time they couldn't give him one, but many years later, the government comes forward with the different ways of explaining the Phoenix lights. We'll ask Dr. Lynn Kitai, who is not just a witness for the Phoenix lights, but also a chronicler of what they really look like with her photographs, which you can link up to at coasttocoastam.com. And we'll compare what she saw and what they're trying to tell her next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. If you missed the first hour with Dr. Charles Pellegrino, you can go back and catch it on Streamlink. But I also posted some of the details about the controversy concerning his book on the blog that's at coasttocoastam.com. While you're there, take a look at the photographs of the Phoenix Lights, and you can link up to Dr. Lynn Kitai there at coasttocoastam.com as well. You mentioned Governor Fife Symington earlier, and he was sort of famous after the Phoenix Lights incident to hold a press conference where he brought up an aide that was dressed like an alien and to kind of mock the whole thing. And then 10 years later, comes forward and says, "Yeah, I saw it too." Had you been in conversation with him before he, if you'll pardon the, for lack of a better term, got religion on it and came forward with his experience?
I have to say I tried, but if we go back and you bring up a really good point, when I came forward in 2004, the accepted official explanation was that the Phoenix lights were flares, military illumination flares, nothing more. But we have to go back to March 13th and look at the data again of what occurred throughout the state, and it wasn't just our state, and we're talking along the most
Right.
populated corridor of Arizona. Whoever did this obviously wanted to be seen. I mean, the same thing was radar stealthy, and yet they turned the lights on. So it doesn't make
Right.
sense for the military to be doing that in the first place over a populated area. And there were also sightings, and I do describe some new reports in the book near Vegas in Nevada and also in New Mexico as well for many, many hours. There were many things going on. It was like a parade throughout the state of these
Sure.
orbs and different kinds of craft that people can take a look at on the website. Well, after the mass sighting happened, there was no investigation. There was no explanation for 5 months. It was uncanny that thousands of people had seen something so extraordinary and were asking, why isn't there an investigation? And
Right.
then there was an article in the USA Today on June 18th on the front page that opened up the sighting to international scrutiny. And we were deluged by media from all over the world. And they too, once they started talking to the witnesses, their descriptions, and by the way, just in the break, I took a look at my email. I received a dozen emails from people who saw this sighting, and I'm so excited. Thank you, Coast to Coast and Ian,
Right.
for sharing this with people because it's so important that people report it and share. And when they started talking to these people, the descriptions were so heartfelt and so detailed that they too were saying, why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? And about a
Yeah.
month later, and I talked about doing my homework. Boy, I called every military base, and they were more interested in seeing my data than giving an explanation for it. In fact, they were just as curious. They had no idea. And suddenly, about a month after the USA Today article came out, I get a call from the head of the PR at the Air National Guard, and she says, "Oh, Dr. Lynn, I think we know what those lights were back in March." And I was thrilled because I was looking for any logical explanation. And she said, would you believe that nobody ever looked at the log for visiting Air National Guard? And the Maryland Air National Guard was in town sending off flares in Operation Snowbird, which I have learned means diversionary tactical maneuver, by the way. And that must be what some people saw. That's exactly what she said. And she didn't know that I had taken pictures prior. And I said, well, when were they in town? And she said, March 1st to the 15th. I said, so the Maryland Air National Guard wasn't in town in January? She said, no. I said, well, I have pictures of the same thing in the same location and confirmed the next morning by air traffic controllers. She says, you never told me that. And then I said, besides the fact that I had educated myself to what flares look like, flares cannot keep a formation. They drift and they drop with the wind, and they have huge smoke trails. They're haphazard. And I said, you're trying to say that flares actually traverse the entire state in a V-shaped, solid V-shaped formation for many hours? She says, oh, I have a call coming in. I'll get back to you. Well, I'm still waiting.
Right. But
so anyway, the next day, they came out with the announcement that it was flares. And then they called the press conference, and that's when the governor came forward to say that he, we all took him seriously. This was the day after the USA Today article, that he found the culprit, and he marches out an aide with an alien head, which really offended many people throughout the state, particularly parents that were with children. And, you know, they know what they did not see. Okay, let me say that. And then the rest is history. I mean, it took a while for him to come forward, but I think he was very brave and courageous to come forward on the 10th anniversary to say that he actually saw the craft and that it was not anything earthly.
The fact that you hadn't had a conversation with him before, you didn't know that he was going to come out and make this admission. And it helps a lot to have somebody like the governor come forward and say this. But at some point before the governor said it, you were hanging out there kind of on your own. What was the feedback you got from your medical colleagues, from the administration of whatever hospitals you might be affiliated with, when you came forward to say, I saw this, here are my photographs, I've researched this, and it's, you know, they ain't flares?
That's a great question, Ian, because it was a real sticky proposition and a dangerous proposition for me to come forward with what I had. And I had actually gone back to work after 4 years as the chief clinical consultant of the Wellness and Imaging Center at the Arizona Heart Institute to help put our younger son through medical school. He's a neurologist now. And during those 3 years, I pared down the book. I really condensed the 750-page journal and made the decision. You know, in good conscience, I couldn't stick what I had in a drawer. And I figured, hey, you know, I've done all I can do to try to research this. It was very frustrating for me, and I know for many people who did experience the true phenomena, that the official explanation, and most people who never saw it or were elsewhere accepted it as being flares. And that is very frustrating because we knew that it was absolutely not flares. Now, I'm not saying that flares might not have been deployed to divert attention away from the real phenomena. We know that at about 8:20 that night, and we have a report later in the morning, about 3 a.m. the next morning at the UFO Reporting Center, Peter Davenport received a report from a crewman from Luke Air Force Base who reported, and this was also witnessed by people, that military jets were sent out to intercept or get gun camera film of this object that was hovering right in the middle of Phoenix over 7th Avenue and Indian School. And just as it got the Air Force was getting close, the object blinked out. And the crewman said that he was one of the people to help one of the pilots out of his own aircraft because he was so shaken up by it. So there were a lot of things happening that really point the finger that something unusual was happening, and certainly the military was well aware of it. So they may have sent off some flares here and there, but that's not what I saw, and that's not what the majority of people that saw the true Phoenix lights saw. So it was pretty frustrating when that came out, and there was so much more to the story, especially, sure, you know, all that I had compiled. So really thought it was important to share that. Once I came forward to answer your question, which I was really, really taken back with the response in a positive way, as soon as the book came out, and I didn't know how people were going to react, I was just in awe and overwhelmed by the stories that people were sharing with me. I mean, doctors would pull me aside and tell me their experience when they were little on a beach when they were 9 years old and saw this or that. Wives of doctors would pull me aside during medical conferences. It was just really amazing how many people have experienced something. And again, most things can be explained, but there's a small percentage that cannot. And when people do have an experience that's extraordinary to them, it stays with them, and it was very fulfilling to know that people appreciated the work that went into the book. And I actually was asked to do a documentary by several people, and I have a company that produces a video and workbook curriculum. So certainly, I wanted to do something on vital health issues. So certainly, I wanted to do something visually with this, but I didn't have any time. I was working 7 to 7 at the Heart Institute, doing radio programs into the night like this, and doing Barnes & Noble and Borders tours on the weekend. And one of the filmmakers, actually, who had studied at Brooks Institute of Photography, Steve Lance, was very persistent, and his parents live here. His father's a doctor here, and we know him. And he said, I'm coming in May, and I'm bringing my equipment, and we're getting started. Well, here I had stayed anonymous for 7 years. I didn't know if the professors that I had met with and the witnesses that had emailed me in confidence would come forward. And every single person I asked said that they would. It was just amazing that things just fell into place. And by June, I had to make a decision and left the Arizona Heart Institute to finish the documentary, and I haven't looked back.
What about the stealth blimp theory, as people call it, the belief that maybe what would account for all of these sightings is some aircraft, some slow moving aircraft that is not a jet plane, not, you know, a kind of a hard-shelled plane, but rather something soft like a V-shaped or chevron-shaped air balloon that has either lights to it or engines attached to it that can turn off the lights, turn off the engines, whatever it has, and automatically appear to go invisible. Where are you with that? Why would that? How does that theory not work?
Okay, another good question. We have on the Phoenix Lights Network, Steve Lance has compiled the different myths, and this is one of them, and why it couldn't have been. So I really urge people to check out the Phoenix Lights Network, because we really tried to put every kind of conceivable conventional thing on there. And as far as the blimp goes, you have to remember, number one, this was massive. Okay, and it was silent. And when you're talking about something like the Ascender Project, which is not top secret, by the way, or something that is top secret, why would a mile-wide blimp be deployed in low suborbital altitudes? There's no way that it could have kept in the air that way. At lower altitudes, it would collapse under its own weight, and you could never build such an enormous aircraft structure at ground level, let alone one that could fly extremely slow under its own power without making some kind of noise or displacing the air or whatever. I mean, there's so many different points when you really look again at the data that it could not have been a blimp. Plus the fact that it went over the most populated corridor of Arizona, that's very dangerous if somebody was doing that. And the fact that the military denied that they were doing anything initially,
right,
and for months, is very concerning. Okay.
Right. Well, I mean, the military denied, the Arizona military denied it, but then said later on, oh, that was the Maryland National Guard that was in town for 2 weeks doing that.
Supposedly they were sending off flares.
Flares, right. But I'm just saying.
That's another thing. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I think, but that speaks to the fact that maybe what they're saying is one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing.
Well, yeah.
And that there may be some experimental aircraft that would not collapse at low altitude, or might be, you know, intended. We don't know what the technology is yet, but like the stealth bomber itself, when it's finally revealed, some people then go, oh, well, now I get it. You know, I'm not Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, even as one of the pilots, there was a pilot that actually, a military and commercial pilot who actually had this thing glide right over his head, and he's in the documentary, and he makes a really good point. Number one, why it couldn't have possibly been flares. I mean, he saw this right over him. That's number one. And as far as anything conventional, these orbs, some people saw these orbs detach from the main object, go out into the environment, and then redock with it. I mean, some of the things aerodynamically and technologically that these phenomena were doing is just so outside the realm of anything that's possible. And if it is possible, why haven't we seen it? I mean, this is 13 years later, and right. We still haven't seen anything that comes close to this kind of technology. And certainly, not only why wouldn't we be using it at this time, but not only that, it's showing up elsewhere in the world. Okay, that's the other thing. Why is it showing up elsewhere? And, you know, if it was ours, why is it showing up in the Middle East and in such a precarious situation in the world today? I don't think that experimental things would be flying around in airspace at that rate like that.
Well, and it may not be experimental anymore. The experiment may be over, and now it may be, you know, being employed as a stealth device. So I'm not saying that's right. I don't think it works for me as an explanation, but I'm merely saying that's probably one way that people would look at that and say, well, it's not experimental anymore, and we can't know about it until we're allowed to know about it. But that's why we're getting reports from around the world. But I, since I'm not invested in that explanation, I want to push that aside for a moment and ask you, what do you think, who do you think was behind what you saw? I mean, you know what you saw, and I once too saw a UFO, but I couldn't tell you that it was little green men. I couldn't tell you that it was something from another planet. All I can tell you is it wasn't of this planet, or it wasn't of a known explanation that I've ever been able to get to.
What did you see?
Well, I saw a formation over Lake Michigan, and I've told the story a couple of times, but it was three separate lights who then kind of went off in the same direction at the same time, and was fascinating. There was no reason, there's no way that it could have been explained, and I checked it through Dr. J. Allen Hynek's UFO Center at the time, and there was no activity in the area, any military activity. There was no search and rescue activity. There's nothing that would even begin to account for the lights. At their most basic level, it doesn't even address what they did at their most complicated phase of what I saw. But even at the most basic level, there was no explanation. But I ask you, what do you think is behind that? Because I couldn't tell you there are Martians. I couldn't tell you that, but I could tell you that I saw something. Now, what do you think was behind it?
Well, I'm with you. I don't know. I mean, I've never said what they are, only that they are. And it's time that we did get this out in the open and addressed it and accepted and study it. And that's a really big thing now for me personally, because once science takes this up as a true science question, then we'll start to move forward. And I know that there are scientists now opening up to this and addressing it. And many, many countries are coming forward now with thousands of UFO files from UK, Brazil, Belgium, Mexico, Denmark recently, saying, hey, you know what? These things are real. They're anomalous. They're unexplainable. We need science to come on board and take a look at this. And I really hope that my work in and of itself will help propel that as well, because there's something going on that it's from another intelligence. That's all that I can say, whether it's time travelers or spirit world or interdimensional, which it does seem to be interdimensional, whatever it is, interstellar. There's something definitely going on that needs our attention in a more scientific way and in a more open way.
Well, I want to actually unpack that idea about the portal over the Native American reservation coming up next. Also, go online and take a look at Dr. Lynn's photographs. Dr. Lynn Kitai is our guest. She has a new book out. There is a video. You can get a DVD of the Phoenix Lights doc. You're going to want to take a look at that. But take a look at the photos first and then be ready to call in. Coming up on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Yeah, it's all about what we're willing to believe, isn't it? What about a time portal? What about a portal to another dimension over this Native American reservation? They refer to them as the Star People. We'll talk more about that coming up with our guest, Dr. Lynn Kitai. Also, and thank you for all the comments that I've been getting tonight on the show. It's very helpful. Some people want to go back to a couple of the other topics that have come up so far. And one in particular, back to a question. Does Dr. Lynn Kitai believe that she was abducted? And is that why she doesn't want to go through hypnotic regression? We'll ask her that question coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Dr. Lynn Kitai, we've been talking to her about her experiences with the Phoenix Lights and the various forms that her work has taken since deciding to come forward 7 years after what she had seen. Going back to your experiences and the first time that you saw lights, somebody sent me a question, and it was going through my mind as well. Do you suspect that in your missing time experience, some 2 to 3 hours in between when one photograph was taken and another photograph was taken, that you were abducted?
You know, Ian, a couple of things. First of all, I never wanted to make this about me.
I understand, but whether you like it or not.
And the fact is, I'm practical. I want to stick to the data and be as scientific as I can. And with all due respect to regression therapists, I feel hypnosis can be very helpful for people in relaxation and other things. But, you know, I don't really look at that as a necessity at this point. Maybe one day I'll feel that I want to do that. But whatever would come from it would only, in my mind, muddy the waters. If it came out that I went on a ship, people are going to have something to say about that. If it came out that I just don't remember, whatever. It's just not necessary at this point for me personally, because I do believe that there has been some kind of contact. I certainly wouldn't be doing this if I wasn't inspired to do it from somewhere. And actually, if you read in my book, I mean, 1 month after the mass sighting, and, you know, if you'd like me to read it to you, I'm happy to read it to you. I had a very profound experience where such incredible thoughts. And this was 1 month, not only 1 month after the mass sighting, but it was also just hours after a couple in Rainbow Valley had seen the lights as well during the day. They have daytime footage. And I came downstairs in the dark and started writing with my eyes closed. I mean, some people would say it's automatic writing. And I put it down, and I didn't look at it until the next morning. And when I looked at it, I mean, there were such deep, profound thoughts within that writing. I didn't know where it came from, and I'm happy to read it to you if you'd like.
Okay, go ahead. Sure.
Okay, and I, you know, it really set me on a journey, I have to say, to find out what it meant, and I have not changed a word of this, and it's actually kind of a gift. And I have to say, in my instance, and certainly, you know, as I said, as Dr. Ruth Hover said, when somebody shares their experience, it tells you more about them than their experience. And I consider myself a very open mind and heart and welcoming of things, very spiritual. And, you know, I feel very good about everything that happened, and that's good enough for me at this point. And certainly I hope that it continues, because I've been very blessed. But anyway, this is what I wrote. This was 1 month after the mass sighting, just hours after there was a daylight sighting that was actually recorded.
Okay.
I don't know about other living creatures in the vast universe, but questions keep permeating my mind about the ones who are trying to get our attention now. What if these beings are as advanced spiritually as they are technologically? What if they want to share this beautiful and wondrous future with us? And what if they have already met our spirit world and know firsthand that the essence of who we are is pure? They may only be trying to help us recognize the positive spirit deep within and teach us to know ourselves for who we really are before we destroy our world. Each and every one of us is a powerful being with the strength and wisdom to deeply appreciate our earth and every living creature on it. It is time we view ourselves in a new light. This can begin by searching within ourselves to find goodness and love so that the consciousness of humankind can elevate spiritually above petty differences, envy, greed, lies, hatred, abuse, violence, and fear. That is our destiny.
And so I guess for to go back to the question from the person on Facebook, if that is our destiny, and if knowing whether or not you had been abducted in this missing time experience.
I don't like that. You know what? I never go there with abduction. To me, it is contact. And
okay, contact.
You know, most people, well, if you look into it, Ian, and most people that feel that they've been abducted, once they do go into therapy, and you can look at Dr. John Mack's work. In fact, my first lecture was with him 1 month before I came forward in February of 2004 at the Tucson Medical Center, University of Arizona. And he was writing a book just on this. I mean, from all his years of experiences with so-called abductees, he was coming around to the point that they were really touched spiritually by this, and that they really grew and had a connection, a very positive connection with whoever was communicating with them. And the other thing that was really poignant, which I go into in the book, if I can mention this, is that when I was interviewing witnesses, other witnesses, a number of them shared with me that they had had near-death experiences as children that was reawakened by the mass sighting. And that really hit home, because I did too. And, you know, when people ask about seeing beings, well, I did during my near-death experience. And I go into detail in the book about it. Did you read about that?
Your book never arrived in time for me to read it, so I have yet to. I was looking forward to it today, but it never got here in time. So
okay, well,
I gathered a lot of information from other interviews that you had given, and so I enjoyed researching you that way. But in that sense, then, you're saying that you had images of some sort of contact in your mind when you were having other experiences?
Not really. I mean, I didn't put this together until way after. I mean, it took a long time for this all to sink in, I have to say. I mean, it took years. In those 7 years, I was also trying to come to grips with what really happened in my childhood and if it had any connection, because I actually saw three beings in white glowing robes with hoods over their head up above the earth. I mean, I describe in detail what happened during my near-death experience. And I have felt that I have never been alone. I mean, I have to admit that we are not alone. And if you really get into my near-death experience, I mean, I was 8 years old, and I came back really transformed as I was finding when I looked into the possible connection of between all unexplained phenomena, be it near-death experience, out-of-body experience, unexplained aerial phenomena that have a mystical light associated with the experience. Lo and behold, just as I was researching UFOs and finding all this credible data, I was finding university-based studies, the Omega Project, which is very detailed and complicated at the University of Connecticut by Dr. Kenneth Ring and Dr. Raymond Fowler and other studies were being done for the connection between all unexplained phenomena. What I mean is not only in the experience itself, and I lay out very simply in the book, but the after effect is so positive, the awakening, the enlightenment that happens within an individual who has an unexplained phenomena experience. I start calling them ups because it is so positive and transformatory, a connectedness to the universe and to the earth and to each other that is so profound, and it changes your whole worldview. Well, this happened when I was a child. I have been living with the idea, the three A's I call it, awareness, attitude, and appreciation for things that come into my life that with an open mind and open eyes. And, you know, when you look at my life, and I've had a very interesting, fun, amazing life, you know, it just speaks for itself, just like the data speaks for itself. And I have dedicated myself to educating others on the reality of things for over 35 years. So, you know, again, you go back and you just look at the data and what has happened to my own life because of an experience that I had. And you don't have to have an up experience to have this transformation. If you open yourself up to it, you learn about it and read about it, It will come.
Okay. Tell me about the, has anybody done any extensive studies in your, whether it's casual or whether this is something which is yet to go beyond perhaps a small group of people? Help me. If there is a portal area over this Native American reservation, are there ways that people have attempted to try to, you know, specifically videotape that area and try and catch phenomenon happening there? Have the Native Americans been participating in the, what they call, you know, the star people, in being able to capture data on the star people? Tell me more about that, because I think that's fascinating.
It is fascinating, and what I just learned recently is that the Hopi Indians are actually sharing with some of the people in the ufology realm their protocol for bringing these things in. I mean, I had no idea that there's actually a protocol. They invite these phenomena. They feel that they're spirit world, and that there are sky people and spirits that come to give them comfort and knowledge, and they're part of their culture. They feel very comfortable. They're not frightened of these things. They welcome them, which is really reassuring when you think of you know, the phenomena that are here. And certainly as far as the area near the Estrellas, which they call Gateway to the Stars, there are many people, I have to tell you, that I even have a friend that choreographed one of the videos, the substance abuse video. He's now in Boston, and he's a big choreographer there at university level. And he actually watches their satellite feeds, and there's cameras that are set up here around the Phoenix area. And he has caught quite a few anomalous photographs in those areas. So there are people far and wide and coming here to live, actually moving here, so they can look at and try to find these phenomena, and are out there with their cameras, and they're actually catching wonderful pictures. I mean, they're actually seeing things that are coming through, and now with the technology that we have, and we're getting better technology, and people are carrying around their cell phones, they're with cameras as well. We're capturing these phenomena where before it could just be blown off as just a mirage or a dream or whatever. It can't be anymore. And hopefully, yes, I wish somebody would set something up.
Yeah, I mean, it's so it would seem, if this is the place where seemingly where lights is, as I understand your explanation, what I've read from others, that the lights tend to disappear over this area. They float in that direction, or they glide into that area, and then they just go away.
Right. Right. So and it's not just here. I mean, there are portals or these phenomena are occurring worldwide. But certainly there's something in this area that is quite riveting when you think about the possibilities of them coming in and out of a gateway or a portal. And certainly the native cultures believe that that's happening.
What's next for you, as you've made your case as best you can on what you saw that night and what you've experienced, and you've left medicine at least temporarily in order to pursue this. Where do you see it going? What do you ultimately want?
First of all, I am so thrilled that people actually are reading this. That's why I came forward, because I knew that if I didn't come forward, that it would just sit on a shelf or in a drawer. And the fact that it is out there and people are looking at it, if I can be a credible voice so they actually pick it up and look at the data, then I've really done what in my heart, what needed to be done as an educator and a scientist and a healer. And of course, the documentary, we're also coming out with an updated documentary at the end of the month, which I have to say, I mean, that has been evolving for the past 5 years, and we have wonderful, wonderful people who have come forward, and that's really important too. I mean, being able to feel comfortable coming forward and talking about this is very healing, and it's really important now, and more people are feeling more comfortable. I was thrilled when the governor came forward, because maybe, you know, maybe my work helped to him to see that, you know, the ridicule and the ostracizing fracking and all that that's been so prevalent for so long is really dissipating. Phoenix, particularly, Arizona, is a model for others in the media. The media has really embraced this. I used to do reporting for NBC here in the early 80s, and when I finally came forward, the people that I had just started out with were also starting out, and by the time I came forward in 2004, they were the news director or the head of production, and they have just embraced this. I mean, there's no more snickering, no more ridicule. They welcome reports. They do them credibly and professionally, and they're really a model, and that in itself is a positive transformation. And the other thing, to answer your question, is that I am now taking a step back as soon as the new book and the documentary are out there. Again, the data speaks for itself. It's not about me. I am so passionate about young people, and I really want to get back to the curriculum that I'm doing. I have started a curriculum now on this topic for the classroom.
And so that you would be able to teach essentially like a close encounters class?
Well, actually, we'd be learning through the different classes, such as in the mathematics class, we would address the crop circles, and they would learn about crop circles because I'm working with a senior professor at ASU on all the mathematical possibilities. It's so intriguing when you look into crop circles. And by the way, these orbs many times are seen above the crop before the crop circles are forming. And there's even photographs of crop circles forming with these orbs hovering over them. So there is a connection there. But nonetheless, crop circles are a form, an art form that certainly is not only an art form, but is also very complicated mathematical equations within the crop circles. So this way can pique kids' interest mathematically. History, certainly, there is such a history of these phenomena from the time human documentation started that is so intriguing when you really look at the data. There is nothing. In fact, that was the first thing that prompted me to do the documentary. That was the main thing that prompted me. I was invited from parents who had seen me at Barnes & Noble when we were deciding whether to do the documentary, and there were 200 middle school children sitting on the edge of their chairs. I could not believe it was the last period of the day. You could hear a pin drop. They thirst for this knowledge.
I imagine so. I'm not sure. I'm sure we'll hear from many other people who also experienced lights and or the same shapes in the sky back March 13th, 1997. We'll go to the phones here coming up for Dr. Lynn Kitai. Her book and a DVD is also out on the same subject of the Phoenix Lights. She is a former skeptic who became a believer because of what she saw firsthand and that experience being interpreted into a curriculum. They could even teach in schools to help people understand what this UFO experience is all about. We'll find out more about that coming up in just a second. Your questions and comments on the way. And if you got a minute, go to the blog and take a look at the photographs. You go to coasttocoastam.com. You can link up to the photographs right there at the Coast to Coast website of Dr. Lynn Kitai. And the link is there, too, to take you to her website as well at coasttocoastam.com. This is Ian Punnett.